Please, have a seat. And the next case on our calendar is Baldwin v. Baldwin. Counsel, ordinarily we have 15 minutes of argument on both sides, and we allow 5 minutes of rebuttal to appellant's counsel. I'm assuming, since there's no one opposing you today in the briefing, that you won't want to offer rebuttal to your own argument. But you will have 15 minutes to present your case to us. We have received the briefing. If you could, just as you take the lectern, there's a button in front that allows you to raise or lower it to your height. You'll have 15 minutes, as I said, to present your argument. Do state your name as you commence your argument for the benefit of the oral recording of the today's proceedings.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Michael Schwartz. I'm really quite honored to be in front of this panel. You've been on the bench for many years and have issued many worthy opinions. And welcome to the bench. It's my privilege to represent the appellant Betsy Baldwin in this case. And to avoid the gotcha question down the road, I will say I don't think this is a close call. And it's an important case. It involves an OFP denial, and it relates not just to Ms. Baldwin, but it relates to other women, other individuals that may not be women, but most likely, who find themselves in the situation that she was in that caused her to file for the OFP in the first place. I'm sure the court is well aware of the requirements of Minnesota Statute 518B01 that allows for and requires an order for protection to be issued if a person, and I quote, manifests a present intention to inflict fear of imminent physical harm, bodily injury, or assault. Inflict fear. It doesn't require that there be physical harm. It doesn't require there be physical injury. It doesn't require there be assault. It says, are you intending to inflict fear?
And what was the statement or behavior that you think most supports the determination that would require the OFP, the intent to inflict fear?
The one most directly relevant, Your Honor, and I apologize for this, but it's, I hope you fucking die, as he's standing outside the door of her home after having banged on the doorbell so hard that it broke.
Now, he did, as I understand the record, provide the district court with a context for that statement, along with what he is saying immediately followed, which would put the, I think, mitigate perhaps any fear that one might have. Do you agree with that or no?
Well, I actually do not, Judge. I think... based on his passive aggressive conduct that went on both with Ms. Baldwin and their sons, he would engage in this conduct. If you've done something to inflict the fear in which he did, to say I'm sorry or to regret it doesn't eliminate it. It doesn't undo what he did.
Well, if he says I didn't mean that, I mean, if he communicates that to the district court and the district court makes findings consistent with his description of what happened.
Okay.
What do we do with that on appeal?
I think the court did make findings, but the findings weren't consistent with Ms. Baldwin being soothed by his apology, especially in the context of the other things that he did. For example, the text message that he sent, regarding what he had said, I don't mean this. I'm exhausted. You will not get the dogs back without a court order, and good luck getting boys to school, or just apologize. Just say you are sorry one fucking time. So his testimony to the court that, gee, I said I was sorry.
I'm sorry. You should just let it go. I think the testimony was when he was asked what he said, he said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I'm exhausted by all this. Was that communication that the court interpreted was was communicated to your client contemporaneous with the statement, or is this something of the district, or just the characterization later on in court?
It was in a text message that followed, Judge. So if you look at the entire circumstances, which I think the case law allows and requires, when you add in his conduct prior to the words being said, you take into consideration that they're in the middle of this acrimonious divorce, which the court noted. I understand the timing of this, February 16th of 2024, which is just short of a month prior to the scheduled trial on March 20th that took place. You look at the second instance on March 26th, which was 6 days after the trial. You look at the incidents that took place with Oscar, one of
the
sons.
With the children, though, you can see that you know, the court was within its discretion to decide that those incidents were not indications of a need for an order for protection.
Yes, the judge did.
Assuming that, you know, the first statement, and then he apologized, and the court seemed to place great weight that indicated that your client wasn't afraid. What is your best argument for the second, the 3/26/24 incident, that he was attempting to inflict fear of imminent physical harm on your client?
If I might, Judge, I don't think the court found that she wasn't afraid. To the contrary.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
Found she that she was afraid.
She was frightened.
Yes.
The court is persuaded the petitioner was frightened.
Yes.
But was that frightened of imminent physical harm or just frightened in general?
Of course it's imminent physical harm. I hope you die. You can't have... that's physical harm in its worst sense. It's bodily injury in its worst sense. That I hope you die, and that's it. Is exactly what she was afraid of, and the court found her credible when she said that she was afraid, and so especially when you put into the context of this whole thing, he came to pick up the dogs. The dogs were in the car outside waiting for him. So this had nothing to do with picking up the dogs. This had to do with instilling fear in her own home, and it was repeated on March 26th.
And the reason she was in fear of infliction of imminent physical harm was because he came unannounced. He was there for 35 to 40 minutes, and then she called 911 twice. Is that what we should be focusing on?
On that incident, yes, Judge.
Of course. Okay.
And in the entire context of things, along with the text about wanting her to apologize, the text about her calling or him calling her greedy and not liking the fact that their divorce was contested and not a settlement that he had been proposing, et cetera. He wanted her to be afraid, and he succeeded in that. And the district court found that she was afraid. The district court found...
Well, can you be afraid and not be in fear of imminent physical harm?
Well, in these circumstances, great question. But in these circumstances, I think not, because you have to ask yourself the question, what are you afraid of if you're not afraid of what he means when he says, I hope you die? It wasn't, I'm afraid I'm not going to get the twins tickets or something like that. He wanted her to be afraid of that because he was trying to leverage apologies out of her, leverage settlements out of her, et cetera.
Just so I'm clear in the facts, I thought the finding that where the court said the court was persuaded that she was frightened was after the March 26th incident, not the I hope you die incident. Am I misunderstanding the record?
In the sequence of her order, it came after she addressed both of those things, but I don't read it that she is addressing only that incident. I think she was addressing the combination of incidents.
Fair enough. How do we reconcile the district court's, how should we reconcile the district court's statement that your client was frightened with the immediately following statement that this was not domestic abuse. Are you saying they're irreconcilable?
Yeah. I think it's because the court misunderstood, respectfully, and misapplied the law. The court thought that there had to be a, you know, let me find her exact words. A verbal, it had to be a threat, a specific, let's see.
I think it's in 9. Petitioner has not proved the respondent has engaged in domestic abuse as that term is defined in Minnesota Statute 518B.01. And then the court goes on to say that the actions did not rise to the statutory requirement of physical harm, bodily injury, or assault, the affliction of fear of imminent physical harm, bodily injury, or assault, or terroristic threats did not. Petitioner did not meet the burden. I think that's where the court is saying, you know, giving context to, you know, this was not domestic abuse under the statute.
And I think that's where she misses the law interpreting the statute that states, and we've cited the Bonnet case, and the Hall case, and the Peknovic case, where a verbal threat, depending on the words and circumstances, can inflict fear of imminent physical harm. In determining whether behaviors, words, or gestures constitute a present intent to inflict fear, look at the totality of the evidence, and an overt physical act is not necessary to support the issuance of an OFP. The word that the court used that I think, in answering your question, Judge, I apologize for not having this immediately, was direct threat or violent behavior. The district court articulated that she thought there needed to be a direct threat or there needed to be violent or intimidating behavior. And the law doesn't require the direct threat, and the cases that we have cited support that it does not need to be a direct threat. And there's a similar case that we also cited where a similar petitioner was frightened because of the incident in February, and she became frightened of respondent's behavior. That was found by the court. So I think it did relate that to that incident, Judge, and those were heard words.
And your view is that in context, the only thing that your client could have been frightened of was imminent danger, imminent harm.
Yes, Judge. When she's in her home, he's been banging on the doorbell. He refuses to leave in the first one. The second one, he's again banging on the doorbell repeatedly to the point it broke. Maybe it broke the first one, but repeatedly ringing the doorbell and then refusing to leave the driveway. She was scheduled to leave on a business trip, and he was pacing back up and forth. I don't think you can objectively or reasonably infer that he was intending anything other than to put her in fear of harm. And I think when the court understood the requirement of a direct threat, that's how I think you reconcile the finding of fact that she was put in fear, but then not granting the OFP. With great respect for the district court, the statute and the case law does not require a direct threat, and I think that's where the disconnect was. So we're not asking that the findings of fact that she made, we agree with those findings of fact, actually. But when you look at what the court was that extra hurdle of a direct
threat. Do you
think
the district court, in its findings, was articulating that he intended her to be frightened? And is that an element that's necessary for assault?
I think the district court did find that she was frightened. She found her testimony credible, and she flat
no,
out said.
No, I saw that.
I meant the
intentionality part. Is there an intentionality element that the district court addressed or failed to address regarding whether he intended his statement to cause fear?
Great question. I don't think the court specifically addressed either way, whether he intended to cause fear of imminent harm, or the court doesn't say that he was intending something else by these remarks. I don't think the court said that he was intending to cause fear. District court didn't actually address that.
So I gather your view is that we shouldn't infer that that is a basis for the district court's determination that there was no domestic abuse, that the district court based its decision only on what you believe was a mistaken law, that there had to be a direct threat.
Yes, Judge, I think that's what the disconnect was. I think the court misunderstood and misapplied the law and stated such in the opinion by putting a direct threat element into it. And I think this is the kind of behavior for which OFPs were intended, and we would respectfully request that the district court's denial of the OFP in this case be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz.
I'm out of time, but I'd be happy to answer any other questions that you...
Doesn't appear as if any panel member has any further questions for you. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Judge.
Your oral argument and your brief, very helpful to us. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. The matter is submitted.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. And that being the last argument on our calendar today, we are in recess.